Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is science writer, and I love this, editor of the poetry column in Scientific American, Dava Sobel. And we're talking about her new book, The Elements of Marie Curie, How the Glow of Radium Lit a Path for Women in Science. Dava, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
I love this book, but as you write in the beginning of the book, she's probably the only woman scientist that most people can name, even though she won two Nobels.
It's true.
That's sad.
Even though she's been dead 90 years, she remains the icon of woman scientist.
Or is it only that she's the only scientist that people can remember for some weird reason?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you about this. Every chapter title has, for the most part, an element after the title. Talk to me about those elements, because I was having a hard time linking them up. And they're not all just elements, but there's things like radium and stuff like that.
So every chapter title is a name.
Yeah.
And most of those names are the women who came to work at Madame Curie's lab. But the element named as a second title or subtitle of each chapter really does have something to do with what goes on
okay.
in that chapter. Okay. And some of the elements were thought to be elements at the time, but then turned out later not to be.
Got it. Absolutely. Let's talk about her. Now, she was not always known as Marie Curie. Well, she was born in Poland. Talk to me about her childhood, because she seemed to be, from the very beginning, from the very get-go, a brilliant person.
Yes, and her own family recognized that. So she was the youngest of five children. There was a boy and four girls, and both her parents were teachers. And the littlest one, so she was Maria,
yeah.
or Manya as a diminutive. She had a few pet names because she was the baby of the family. And by the time she was four, it turned out she had taught herself to read. And it came out because one of her older sisters was having trouble reading a passage, and she just read it. And, of course, everybody was shocked. They didn't know she could read. And she was mortified. She thought she'd done something wrong. But that was how they learned that she already knew how to
read. Were her parents in the sciences?
Her father taught math and physics at a boys' high school. Her mother was a headmistress of a girls' school, but died when Marie was only 10.
Yeah. Now, we should give out her complete original name. It's Maria Salomea Sklodowska.
Sklodowska. Yeah, in Polish, if you're talking about the woman, the ending of the name is different. So her father was Sklodowski, but she was Sklodowska.
She went to some interesting schools when she was young. You write that she and her sister attended the secret sessions of the Flying University. That sounds like something out of a fictional book.
I know. So in Warsaw, where they lived, that part of Poland was controlled by Russia at that time. So girls were barred from the university, and the only way they could continue studies after gymnasium was in this secret university. So originally it was very small. Professors would gather with some number of students in someone's home and conduct courses that way. But over time, it really grew quite large, and they had to find places where they could assemble tens, scores of students at a time, and they managed it.
It's amazing. Now, we're going to have to skip around a lot. I'm saying this for the benefit of the audience, because there's so much in this book. But I want to talk about her cousin, Yosef. He studied chemistry with Dmitri Mendeleev, and why is that so critical?
Well, he was very up on the periodic table and other developing issues in chemistry. So I think most of your listeners have probably seen the periodic table.
Yeah, yeah.
It shows up everywhere. It's a symbol of science.
It's usually on the wall when you take a high school chemistry class.
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. But at the time, it was still a work in progress. And Mendeleev had left spaces in the table where he thought other elements as yet undiscovered would fit. And so part of Marie's journey in life was to discover two of those elements.
Now, she eventually moves to France. Why?
To go to university. So she really wanted a degree. She wanted to become a teacher at an advanced level. And one of her older sisters really wanted to become a medical doctor. So the two of them worked out a plan. Marie worked as a governess for years, sent the older one to Paris. And then when Bronya, the older girl, became a doctor and set up practice, she sent for Marie to come in. She was still Maria then, Manya, but when she arrived in Paris, she registered at the university as Marie.
Now she's going to the Sorbonne?
Yes.
Whoa. Was that a big deal for a woman to do that?
Yes. But at least it was legal in France, and she was not the only one. So she signed up in the Faculty of Science. And it was more unusual to have women there, but she was not the only one. Just as she was never the only woman scientist, even though she's the only one most people can name.
What I love about this is that she ends up moving into a classic Parisian garret in the Latin Quarter, six flights up.
Yes, and she had to carry her own coal up to the top. And she just loved that life. She was a person who never needed luxury. She was very serious, very committed. In fact, a woman scientist I know read the book and said, I don't think Marie would have been much fun. You know, even with all my fellow astrophysicists, we talk about science, but then we say, I like your shoes, or where did you get that dress? And she would never have done that.
No, she was always on topic.
Yeah.
She was on a mission, and she was very serious about it. And I haven't ever seen photographs of her laughing.
No,
for me, that's cool. Why not? She's a serious scientist.
Well, there is film footage, I'm happy to tell you, from one of the exclusive physics meetings that she was invited to in Europe. And someone brought an early movie camera to this meeting. This was in the 1920s. And you can see the scientist coming out of the building. And when she comes out, she's laughing.
Ah!
And she said in one of her letters home how much she loves talking physics with all of these.
That's why she was laughing.
Yeah.
She didn't know how to cook when she's moved in by herself either. I know that's just a little sidebar, but I think it's amazing that here's this person, this woman on her way to being an incredible scientist. She finally gets out, gets into Paris, and is going to university. She's living on her own, and she doesn't know how to cook yet.
Right. So mostly she doesn't eat.
Oh, my
God. And that worked until she fainted. And then some friends took her back to her sister and brother-in-law's apartment, and they fed her and insisted that she take better care of herself.
Oh, my God.
She didn't learn to cook till she got married.
Yep. Now, let's talk about meeting Pierre Curie. When did they meet?
They met in 1894. I could be wrong on that. You know, I don't memorize every date in the book.
Well, people should read the book so they get the date.
People should read the book, yes. I know they got married in 1895. I think they met in 1894. So she was given the opportunity to do an important study for the French steel industry.
And this is fascinating work, too. It's about magnetism in steel.
Yeah. Yeah. Which company's steel made the best magnet? That's what she was charged to determine. And so someone suggested that she speak to this other scientist who had a lot of experience with magnetism, and that turned out to be Pierre. And they certainly were not expecting to fall in love. She had a grand plan to go back to Poland and really educate in her home country. But between being in love with him and realizing that she could actually be a scientist in France, which was probably not a path open to her in Poland, she decided to stay.
I love reading about the two of them together because they're both serious scientists working on their projects, and it's like young scientists in love.
Yeah, yeah. They were really in love. It's a beautiful thing that they saved each other's letters and that I was able to, just by quoting from the letters, show how adoring they were of each other.
They went on these bicycle vacations. It was great. They had a child. She had a child. Irene, and yet they're still working relentlessly.
Well, they're working because Pierre's father, so Pierre's mother died right around the time the baby was born, and his father volunteered to move in with them and take care of the baby so Marie could continue working. It was also something for him, too, because in his grief, having this grandchild was a great comfort.
And she defends her doctoral thesis, and they both start to get interested in the energy exuded by uranium, which was at that time called uranic rays. Talk to me about what that is.
It's radioactivity, which is a name that she made up.
That's right.
But at first, they were called uranic rays because they came from uranium and from any ore that contained uranium. So she was interested in those. She made that the subject of her doctoral research. And the first thing she did was to test every other known element for those rays to see if it really was only uranium that emitted them. And she found out that, no, actually the same kind of radiation came from thorium. And then she was on a mission, as you mentioned, to check different types of ore to see if she could find anything else that emitted the rays. And very quickly, she came on an ore that contained something that was far more potent than either uranium or thorium. And she immediately guessed that that's one of those unknown elements. It's in there, and the only signal of its existence is this radiation. And so she got the idea to take the ore apart chemically and isolate that element. She had no idea how rare it was and what a tiny smidgen of it was producing all that activity.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is science writer and editor of the Poetry Column for Scientific American, Dava Sobel. And we're talking about her new book, The Elements of Marie Curie, How the Glow of Radium Lit a Path for Women in Science. Dava, I want to talk about their laboratory conditions, because I think when people think about scientists, or especially things like chemists or physicists working today in a laboratory, they have a vision of what the laboratory is like. The laboratory conditions that the two of them are working under are just miserable.
Yeah, they were really very miserable. In fact, someone who visited them in the lab after they won the Nobel Prize for the work that was done in those outrageously substandard conditions said that the place looked like a cross between a stable and a root cellar. they made do with very little.
And the processes by which they were both working were painstaking. I mean, this is not easy stuff to do with the equipment that they had at that time.
Right. And it was just not easy, period, because it took about a ton of ore to yield even a small amount of this highly, what she called, radioactive substance. And it was a lot of breakdown with noxious chemicals. So there were fumes. There was a lot of boiling and stirring. It's really the scene she conjures when she describes it is almost something out of Macbeth. the witches over the kettle. She talked about using an iron rod to stir this boiling material for hours at a time, and that by the end of the day she'd be broken with fatigue
and exposed to a lot of radiation.
yes, and they recognized right away that when they handled the material, it burned their hands.
And, oh my God!
You'd think they would have realized that the stuff was dangerous, but instead, what happened was that medical doctors seized on it as a potential treatment for cancer because it would destroy tumors, which it did. So for about two decades, radium was the cure for cancer.
Now, there's, again, she's involved in so many aspects of radiation and radioactive material. Talk to me about the element of polonium. She named it after Poland.
Yes, so that was the first element they discovered. So when her work got interesting, Pierre dropped what he was doing and partnered with her in the lab. And the first element they isolated, they named polonium. They couldn't really see it. They couldn't tell you what color it was, but they knew they had it because of its radioactivity. They knew there was another element as well that was even more potent. And about 6 months later, they announced that one and named it radium. I should say, we were talking about the terrible lab conditions, but she made that, and maybe this is one of your questions. Maybe I shouldn't jump ahead.
Always jump
but
ahead.
It was her intention to develop the laboratory into something that Pierre could be proud of, even after his death, that something that was really a testament to their work together and to his memory. And she managed to create an internationally recognized research institute that drew scientists from all over the world to come work there. And a varied form, it still exists today.
She becomes the Sorbonne's first female professor.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, she was the first woman to do many things.
I know.
And that happened as a result of Pierre's death. So
let's talk about that, because
before
then, all of a sudden, this husband and wife scientist team, physicist, chemist team, becomes really beloved by the press. And of course, her reaction is just, they're a bother. They're getting in the way of our working.
Right.
But they
right.
were, but they were like, you know, big things. People wanted to see pictures of them and so on and so forth. And then it's just shocking the way Pierre died.
Yeah. Yeah. So just a stupid accident in the street.
Yeah.
And he was killed instantly. It was a big horse-drawn wagon, and he bumped into one of the horses and fell, and then the wagon wheel crushed his skull. Yeah.
What was her immediate emotional reaction? I'm sure she was grieving and stuff like that. But they were so in love. They were so in love. It was just amazing.
Yeah. But she kept a journal of her grief, which I was able to quote in the book. And she kept it for about a year after his death. And in the journal, she talks to him about how she feels and how she never imagined she'd have to be alone in that laboratory. And and because of his death, the faculty decided that even though she was a woman, she really was the only person who was qualified to take over their laboratory. And so they let her do that, and because by that time Pierre had gotten a teaching position at the Sorbonne, so they had laboratory space in a building that belonged to the university. And then he was also teaching physics. So they invited her to take over his physics course. And that university had been in existence for centuries. They'd never had a woman lecturer before.
I want to mention, and this is because of your title of your book, these radioactive materials also emitted a really eerie glow.
Yes, but they thought it was beautiful. So while they were doing all of that stirring and boiling, they would love sneaking back to the lab at night just to see the glow from the dishes full of various precipitates. And I've talked to various people about what was actually glowing. And probably the radioactive emissions were ionizing the air. And it might have been the nitrogen in the air that was causing that blue glow.
Now, her initial findings about radioactivity really shook the foundations of physics. And for established chemists, it seemed like alchemy, that they were transmuting one element into another because they thought elements were immutable.
Exactly. The whole idea of an element from ancient times was of something that didn't change. And with radioactivity, what was actually going on, these emissions would turn one element into another. So uranium would transmute into thorium,
yep,
and then thorium into radium. And it took a long time for that whole chain of events to really be understood, how it worked, what was being emitted, other missing elements that turned up in the course of her research and the research of others.
It's interesting. Not only did these radioactive materials emit a glow, they emitted heat and they emitted,
yes,
a gas.
Yes, only some of the elements emit a gas. Uranium does not, but thorium does and radium does. And the gas is the element radon, which is one of the noble gases because it doesn't react with any other elements.
We're almost out of time, so we're not going to be able to go through the meat of the book. But the great thing is women were attracted to her laboratory and either came to work there or be associated with her.
Yes. So once she was in that unique position of head of a laboratory and professor, people came to her from Norway, Canada, Eastern Europe.
Many women.
France, Portugal, the Netherlands, you name it. And she didn't have to look for them. They came to her.
Now, I've got to mention about a talk about her daughter, Eve Curie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She ended up doing something for her mother's legacy.
She wrote her biography.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a wonderful book.
And the movie was based on that, too.
Yes, the movie in which Madame Curie is played by Greer Garson.
Yeah, she's a little too Hollywood-looking.
Yeah, you think?
I mean, I love Greer Garson as an actress, but she doesn't get to the nitty-gritty of Marie.
No, and they don't really. It's not a movie about science. You know,
it's the relationship.
It's the romantic couple and how adorable they were working together in the lab.
Has there never been another movie about?
There have been other movies, but I can't say I recommend them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now,
said.
Ultimately, her remains were moved to the Pantheon.
Yes, another place where she was the first woman to be so honored.
Now, this is going to sound like a dumb question, hopefully. You went and you saw her letters in her journal and stuff like that. Are they radioactive?
Well, I did the research for this book during the pandemic.
Oh, God.
So my plans to go to Paris were immediately foiled by the lockdown. But Madame Curie's papers are digitized.
Ah.
And the French National Library system is a fantastic resource. So I read that whole grief journal as well as letters, drafts of letters, diaries, online.
But do you know if they're still radioactive?
They probably are. I think people, I only just saw my first actual letters a couple of weeks ago. The American Philosophical Society in Philadelphia, of which she was a foreign member, and she actually visited the building in the 1920s. She came to the United States twice. They have two letters, handwritten letters from her.
Oh, wow.
So those were the first actual documents I saw. And I suggested that they have them tested with a Geiger counter.
Oh, yeah.
They are doing that now.
Yeah. My guest tonight has been science writer and editor of the poetry column at Scientific American, which, by the way, I love the fact that you do that.
Thank you. I wish we had time to talk about that.
You know, we can do another interview just about that, because I think that would be worthwhile.
Okay.
Dava Sobel, and we're talking about her new book, The Elements of Marie Curie, How the Glow of Radium Lit a Path for Women in Science. Dave, it's been a really pleasure.
For me, too. Thank you.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.